Welcome to Benefits Update. This is Natalie Choate. Today we're going to talk about qualified disclaimers of retirement benefits. A qualified disclaimer is the refusal to accept a gift or an inheritance. But why would anyone ever refuse to accept an inheritance? Well, for a familiar reason, to save taxes. For example, suppose father dies and leaves his $2 million IRA to mother as primary beneficiary. But mother is already very wealthy. She has her own $5 million IRA plus lots of other assets. The last thing she needs is another big pile of taxable income from father. Plus, since father left his entire estate to mother, father just wasted his $2 million federal estate tax exemption. But mother can fix the situation by disclaiming the IRA. She refuses to accept the ownership of it. She doesn't do that with a phone call or a wave of the magic wand. She does it by filing a written, unconditional, irrevocable disclaimer with the IRA provider and possibly other parties like the executor, depending on the facts. And the result of this disclaimer is that the IRA will pass to the next beneficiary just as if mother had actually predeceased father. That means the IRA typically will pass to the contingent beneficiaries named in father's beneficiary designation form. Let's assume that father's contingent beneficiaries are the couple's children. So what happens is the children are now going to inherit that $2 million IRA that mother disclaimed. Look at the good tax results here. By disclaiming, mother has created a credit shelter estate plan for father, even though he himself neglected this part of estate planning. The $2 million IRA passes to the children, and that makes use of father's $2 million estate tax exemption or credit shelter. Also, we get good income tax results because the IRS recognizes disclaimers as effective to change the beneficiary for minimum distribution purposes as well as estate tax purposes. So the children will be considered the designated beneficiaries of the account, and they can withdraw that IRA gradually over their life expectancies. Well, it all sounds wonderfully easy, and sometimes it even is, but there are lots of pitfalls. For one thing, when mother disclaims, the IRA must pass automatically to whoever is the next beneficiary. That typically would be the contingent beneficiary named in the beneficiary designation form, but suppose there is no contingent beneficiary named. Then probably the effect of the disclaimer will be to make the account go to father's estate as default beneficiary, and we'll still get our good estate tax results by keeping the money out of mother's estate, but the minimum distribution results will not be so good. The key is that mother, as the person who makes the disclaimer, cannot have any say in who gets the money as the result of the disclaimer. So she can't say, well, I want to disclaim the IRA over to our son Billy because he needs the money, and I don't want it to go to Nancy because she's in the middle of a divorce right now. So if your client is considering a disclaimer, make absolutely sure where that money's going to pass as a result of the disclaimer before the client signs the papers. You don't want any ugly surprises. And remember, disclaimers are irrevocable. By the way, why are disclaimers even allowed at all? Doesn't it seem, we've got a mother. She's absolutely legally, morally, and every other way entitled to own this IRA as primary beneficiary of father. And she turns it down and allows it to pass to the children. Hasn't she made a gift that should be subject to gift tax? Well, the IRS would have liked to tax disclaimers as gifts, but the courts wouldn't let them. The courts said, you can't give away something that you don't own. And you never owned this asset, and you can't be forced to accept an inheritance. So the court said when you make a disclaimer, you're just refusing to accept that inheritance. You're not making a gift. And Congress had to go along with that. And they passed Code Section 2518, which recognizes that qualified disclaimers are not taxable gifts if you do it right, if you follow all the requirements of Section 2518. Let's look at some of those requirements and how strict they are. Remember, the key here is it's a refusal to accept the inheritance. So that means if mother wants her disclaimer to be qualified, She cannot do anything that would be a considered acceptance of the IRA. For example, if she starts calling the broker and buying and selling securities inside the IRA, she's exercising control over it, and that is not consistent with the idea that she didn't accept it. So exercising control of the account is considered acceptance. Same if she rolls the money over to her own IRA. She's accepted it. She's taken control of the money. She cannot later disclaim it. What if she takes a distribution from the account? Well, this one is actually a little tricky. Clearly, when she takes a distribution from the inherited IRA, she has accepted the distribution. So if she takes money out, she can't later say she didn't accept the money she took out. But what about the part she didn't take out? What about the part that is not distributed to her? Can she take some money out and disclaim the rest? The key will be proving that she didn't accept the rest. Now, here we get a little break from the IRS. The IRS has given us a safe harbor here. When any beneficiary is going to disclaim a retirement account, the beneficiary can take the minimum required distribution for the year of death. And that's a big help. You don't want to risk penalties. So typically, the beneficiary is going to run in there and take out the minimum required distribution for the year of death. That's fine, says the IRS. That doesn't count against you. If that's all you do, you can still disclaim all of the rest of the account. So that's very helpful. But what if you take out more than the minimum distribution? Well, that doesn't mean that you've necessarily accepted the entire account. So let's say the minimum distribution is $100 and mother takes out $1,000. For that extra $900, she doesn't have the benefit of a safe harbor. And she'll have the burden of proof to the IRS that taking a $1,000 distribution did not constitute acceptance of the rest of the $2 million IRA. So she has the burden of proof. It's tricky. It's not impossible. More requirements. Qualified disclaimers have a rigid deadline, which is typically 9 months after the date of death, and no extensions or waivers are possible. A longer deadline may be possible with a minor beneficiary, however. So if a disclaimer is going to be considered, make sure it's considered as quickly as possible after the participant's death. Until the decision is made as to whether or not there will be a disclaimer, make sure the beneficiary does not exercise control over the account, and if possible, make sure they don't take any distributions beyond the required minimum distribution. Finally, as a result of the disclaimer, you've got to make sure that you're absolutely sure where that money's going to go when the disclaimer is done, before it happens. We now know the requirements, but who should think about making qualified disclaimers? When should this option be something that definitely is you're going to think of? And there's three classic cases where a disclaimer can be very advantageous. We've already looked at one. A surviving spouse who is named as outright beneficiary might want to disclaim and allow the benefits to flow into a credit shelter trust or to the children, if whoever's the contingent beneficiary, to save estate taxes. Another classic case to save estate taxes is an adult child who's named as primary beneficiary who might want to disclaim and let the benefits go to his children as contingent beneficiaries. That would be the grandchildren of the original participant, and maybe that would be a good way to use up the deceased participant's generation-skipping exemption. The third classic case to consider it is double deaths. When a husband and wife die within a short time of each other, I call that double deaths. Of course, it plays havoc with everything, and particularly with retirement benefits, because the surviving spouse probably died before having a chance to roll over any benefits that were he or she was named as primary beneficiary of. So in that case, look at having the estate of the surviving spouse disclaim the benefits on behalf of the surviving spouse so they will go to the contingent beneficiary of the first spouse who died. And that is often a way that you can salvage a life expectancy payout in those situations. We've looked at disclaimers. Now you know when to use them and you know how to use them. For Morningstar Advisor, this is Natalie Choate.